Our next case is 11-1850, the City of Girard versus the Youngstown Belt Railway Company et al. For the City of Girard, the appellant, Mr. Boder.
May it please the court. Counsel for Appley, counsel for Amicus Curiae. The importance of this court's holding in this particular case cannot be overemphasized. In a broad sense, its ruling will decide whether or not the historic powers, police powers, and the property laws of the state will be upheld by giving our own state courts jurisdiction to decide on a case-by-case analysis whether or not a particular set of facts falls within the purview of federal preemption or whether jurisdiction will be subjugated to federal jurisdiction.
Just how serious is the railroad about...
I'm so sorry.
Just how serious is the railroad about defending its position?
How serious?
Yes.
Very serious.
All right. So why didn't you all end up in federal court then? Because if we say the city wins, there is no preemption, wouldn't a federal court have the final say on that subject?
I don't know whether it would ultimately take jurisdiction. However, since this matter is an eminent domain proceeding, Your Honor, and the nub of the case was an eminent domain proceeding, it started in state courts.
I understand that, but I mean, you're really quarreling about a question that ultimately federal court's going to hold the trump card.
Well, in this case, by virtue of the fact that the lower court and the Court of Appeals was confused, I felt the policy matter would be most fitting to be decided by the Ohio Supreme Court.
Do you believe that you would not get a fair shake on Ohio's laws in the federal system? Is there? I guess I fairly understand why you're so insistent that the state court hear this and be subject to possibly 88 different interpretations if we rule your way versus a regular, steady body of law that is consistent as developed by the federal court.
Well, obviously, there's this interplay between federal power and state power, and I would think that our state courts would certainly, if they can construe matters that would keep these historic rights of the states, that it should be decided by a state court. If the federal court disagrees with it, then I don't know what the outcome would be. However, I felt it fitting to first come to our state court to interpret our laws and the preemption as they affect our state laws, and that's why I brought it here, ma'am.
And the United States Court of Appeals, the Third District, has already laid out the test for determining whether the state is preempted or not. And they established, as the amici cite from the state of Ohio, that there has to be more than just a nexus in order for the railroad preemption statute to apply. Isn't that right?
Well, we maintain that there is a nexus here. I mean, basically, we're saying that, and of course the STB, the Surface Transportation Board itself, acknowledges the fact that courts, state courts do and regularly do, decide preemption cases. And that's set forth in my holding. And that's, we believe that that has established the nexus.
When you read the opinion, it looks like it's just...
I'm sorry.
When you read the opinion, it looks like it's a factual dispute. I mean, the trial court went through the analysis and figured out that the
railroad... Well, to some degree, it all depends. The dissenting opinion in the lower court of appeals indicated that they felt there was no dispute of the facts, that basically there was no preemption here, and that it should be remanded back to the lower court for trial as an eminent...
That was a dissenting opinion. The majority said, well, it's clear the railroad's still using this. You may not believe them or whatever, but the evidence is
sufficient. Well, but the majority was, if you read the opinion, Your Honor, it seems to be wishy-washy. In other words, there was a lot of confusion. First of all, it started in the trial court, and the trial court said there's preemption per se. And they used the case of Union Pacific versus Chicago Transit. Counsel for the appellee used Union Pacific versus Chicago Transit. However, they failed to recognize that that case was reversed by the Court of Appeals, and that Court of Appeals says no. It's not per se. It's as applied analysis in each particular case on a case-by-case basis. Now, the Court of Appeals in this case indicated that, this is implied preemption. The court did have jurisdiction, and that it should refer it to the STB.
But that's a factual dispute. They looked at the facts. They said, this looks like the railroad's still using it. We decide the issues in their favor. And do we have to second-guess the facts, or do we have to rejudge the facts to reach the conclusion you want?
Yes, Your Honor, but it's interesting in the footnote of the Court of Appeals decision. They said they acknowledge that it does not unreasonably interfere. This case, the facts did not unreasonably interfere with railroad use.
So my
and
question,
that the
my,
railroad operations could continue to go on, ma'am.
My question is, do we have to reassess the facts and give our opinion of the facts to be able to
I think the Court of Appeals decided the case de novo, and we maintain that based upon those facts, that the findings, the fact that were in the record, that the Court of Appeals itself, by its own admission, saying that it didn't interfere with railroad purposes, they could still operate. By that fact, there's a contradiction between its finding and so the facts.
Let me ask the question a third time. Do we, this court, not with the Court of Appeals, not the trial court, do we have to reassess the facts and make our own judgment based on the facts and the record to get to the position?
Under this situation, I believe so, ma'am, particularly when the Court of Appeals contradicts its own facts. As I said, the U.S. District Court of Appeals in Union Pacific said that the courts have consistently required railroads to show that the proposed condemnation will unreasonably interfere with rail transportation. And our Court of Appeals says, well, it doesn't unreasonably interfere, even though they said, well, we have jurisdiction, but it'll have to go to the Surface Transportation Board. Consequently, the wealth of authority in the United States, as cited in our brief, does not adopt the principle of per se a preemption. In that regard, the United States Supreme Court in Medtronic versus Lohr stated, because states are independent sovereigns in our federal system, we have long presumed that Congress does not cavalierly preempt state law causes of action, and it supports a presumption against the preemption of state police powers, regulations to support a narrow interpretation of such express command.
If this is a factual dispute, what principle of law do you want us to write that would be different than is cited? You just think they've applied the law wrong. What new principle of law would we write in this case according to
you? I think they're stated, Your Honor, in my propositions of law that I've cited in my brief. I've indicated, and they're set forth here.
But those are already the law, isn't it? It's just you don't think they were properly applied. Is there anything new in what you're stating in your proposition of law?
Well, I guess the lower court is not following those propositions of law that we have gleaned from other jurisdictions. Mine is based upon the United States Supreme Court authority, various, not only the Surface Transportation Authority, but also other appellate courts, which hopefully this court would adopt some of that reasoning, which I think has come down. It probably started out with the ICCTA of the broad sweep of the brush that, all railroad transport, anything connected with the railroad is preempted. And slowly we find that this is being refined more and more by the courts to say, wait a minute, just because you're a railroad, that doesn't necessarily mean that any property that you own or and you can other people can use your property. And like in this case, you can sell the property. You don't reserve any rights whatsoever in this property. You sell all 55 acres along with your railroad tracks. And then you say, well, you know, since the contract is not consummated, that therefore, oh, we may have a use in the future, but you don't have any plans, specifications, any records or anything
well, counsel,
to show your use.
My understanding is that they were in the process of selling it for a waste site.
Correct.
Why didn't you just let it go to the waste site and then condemn it? Or, I mean, you know, take it.
Well, it seems
it would have gotten the railroad out of the whole mess, wouldn't it?
Well, it seems a shame to get all this in motion and all this money spent by a waste logistics company and then go in and try to appropriate it when the cost would be even higher, Your Honor.
It would have given you a fair market value on how to compensate the waste company for the taking.
Well, that's what I mean, and that might be more valuable with the improvements than on the bare land. So we would probably be paying more in the appropriation case with the equipment and all the
plans.
So
you thought you could get a better deal by taking it from the railroad as opposed to the private owner?
I think so. Yes, I think so. I think a jury would recognize that this is bare land. It's never been, there's no evidence it was used before. We're not taking all of the railroad land. We're only taking 41 acres of the 55 acres.
And they were going to sell the whole.
And they were going to sell the whole thing along with the tracks.
So it was a better deal for the railroad to sell it to the waste than to wait for the city to come by and take it by eminent domain.
Well, it all depends what the jury would find in the appropriation case. They offered to sell it at $250,000. You know, and there was no reservations, no conditions whatsoever in the sale.
Mm-hmm. Now, who offered to sell?
What do you? The railroad
offered to sell it to.
To the they had a contract of sale to a Girard Waste Logistics, which was the landfill company. So they would, if they would have divested themselves entirely of every element or property right in that case. And we're saying, well, if you're being forthright and you're saying you need it for railroad purposes and you're willing to sell it for a landfill, to use for landfill with no reservations and conditions, that's a tacit admission that you don't need it for railroad purposes. And we have cited three cases in our brief in which the Surface Transportation, two courts and a Surface Transportation Board has stated that landfill activity is not rail transportation.
Counsel, are you saying in a way that the for your proposition that there's no per se preemption simply because the railroad is a party to a case?
I
thought I understood. I want to understand your position. It seemed to me that you're saying there's no per se preemption.
There could
simply
be.
Because the railroad is a party in a case.
No, there could be, and that's why we get back to the surface transportation case. It's on a case-by-case basis. I can visualize the fact that if they are using a railroad track to transport goods and persons, that basically if the city takes that track, there's no question in my mind that that's an unreasonable interference with railroad, and therefore it's a per se.
Okay, so but you're saying you have to have the unreasonable interference with
an
the
unreasonable interference. And we're saying there isn't an unreasonable interference here because you have already contracted and two written contracts, by the way, not just one, two written to sell all 55 acres with no strings attached. And, of course, the lower court said, the trial court says, well, the contract hasn't been consummated. And we're saying that's irrelevant. The fact is that you were willing to dedicate this property for a landfill.
But then again, this gets to Justice Stratton's question. It seems that you're not changing or your proposition does not advance the law in any way because that's what the law currently says. What you're arguing about is the application of that law to this case, are you not?
Well, yes, but I don't see where this pronouncement has come from this Supreme Court of Ohio.
Counsel,
we've had no pronouncement by the state of Ohio and from this high court.
Counsel, I'm interested in a mere technicality. On the front of your...
I'm so sorry. I
on the front of your brief, you list Total Waste Logistics Girard, LLC, as an appellee pro se. How can an LLC be an appellee pro se? I see in the trial court, the court recognizes that TWL filed a motion to intervene in November. In light of the court's decision, the court finds the motion is moot. The point will hold any decision on said motion in abeyance pending the outcome of the stay.
I can tell you how it came up. Actually, Waste Logistics, Your Honor, did have counsel. And then as the case was proceeding, they were filing applications for the permit. And then they decided, well, we don't need counsel. We don't have counsel anymore.
Well, they're not even in the case. So why do you put them on your brief?
Well, they were a party, and maybe I should have stricken them from my brief, Your Honor. Maybe I should have filed a
motion. The court denied them or stayed the motion to intervene.
Well, they filed a motion to intervene with the lower court, and the court allowed it.
The court said, I'm not allowing that. So what are they doing on your brief?
Well, I don't know where we're going with this, except...
I'm just curious.
Yeah, except that...
I don't know how an LLC can be a pro se.
It probably can't, and maybe a motion to dismiss might have been in order in this case. But, however, they did intervene, and we've given them notice, so they're on board. They are still, by the way, the vendee of the property on the contract.
Thank you.
That contract has not been canceled, and it has not been consummated.
Thank you. Mr. Stokes, you're going to take 5 minutes and argue a neutral position?
Yes, Your Honor. Michael Stokes, appearing on behalf of the state of Ohio as an amicus curiae, I'd like to thank the court for allowing us to argue here today. We are here to advocate for the integrity of Ohio law within the federal system. We believe that the courts below erred by watering down the presumption against federal preemption of state law. Preemption has to be applied narrowly because it has really big consequences. Here, the appeals court said that federal preemption applied because a railroad's participation in transporting debris to a landfill was railroad transportation within the meaning of ICTA. If preemption occurs on those facts, what if the property was used for disposal of something else, like fracking fluid, which is not federally regulated? Would the state of Ohio be unable to regulate that activity just because the fracking fluid was delivered by a rail car or just because the property was owned by a railroad? Our position is that Congress did not intend to create islands of property that were immune from state regulation just because a railroad owns them or just because a railroad delivers to them. And that's why we're asking for a reversal and remand here.
This is not a case where it's improvidently accepted. In other words, this is not a situation where the Court of Appeals merely incorrectly applied the law, but there are bigger ramifications here.
There are bigger ramifications, yes. If this ruling is allowed to stand, it significantly broadens the preemptive scope of ICTA, according to our understanding and according to the cases that we've got in our briefs. Essentially, again, this paragraph 56 in the appeals opinion, if a railroad is bringing stuff in, then good enough, it's preempted.
How would you
suggest we craft this rule that you seek?
Well, in the first place, we'd suggest that it's clear that state courts do have jurisdiction to decide preemption questions. It happens all the time. It happens frequently under ICTA. So first off, the state courts do have jurisdiction to decide preemption issues.
And that's,
secondly,
that's current law.
Yes, ma'am?
That's current law.
Yes.
Okay.
Secondly, again, I don't think that we're asking for any change in the law. We're asking to have the existing law with the cognizance of the strong presumption against preemption correctly applied in this case. The ruling below is not only did they get it wrong, they got it wrong in a way that really opens the door to a wide range of cases where a property owner, a railroad, somebody who isn't a railroad but's getting delivery by rail could say, listen, this is going to have an effect on rail transportation, or we get rail transportation, you can't regulate us because of that.
Is your argument action grounded on the fact that they're not appropriating the railroad track itself, and they're leaving a right-of-way adjacent to it, and they're simply taking the property between the east and the west? They're taking the middle part.
That is an important fact here.
So if the entire 55 acres were being taken, your argument would be different?
It could be different. It depends on the facts. There actually is a case, it was an STB, actually it was an ICC decision from Tarrant County, Texas, in which Texas DOT was taking railroad land that had an active rail line on it, but Texas DOT was also paying to have that line relocated. And all the railroad needed to do was exercise its own eminent domain authority to condemn land to put the rail line onto, to relocate it. And
so,
then the
so
state
this doctrine you want us to establish is really dependent on the facts of what property is being taken in each individual case.
That would, yeah, our view is
so
that.
How do we write the rule, as Justice Stratton says, if there can be so many different kinds of takings?
Well, I think it's going to be hard to have a rule that will escape a fact-based application. The Seventh Circuit in the Union Pacific case did a good job of explaining why the categorical or per se type of preemption would very rarely apply to an appropriation case, because those cases by their nature are fact-specific. But
so if we go on a case-by-case basis, what is the rule you'd have us write here?
Well, that there would have to be an effect. The state regulation, as applied, would have to have an effect that either prevents or unreasonably interferes with railroad transportation, with transportation by rail carrier. And those terms all have a definite meaning under the Interstate Commerce Commission Termination Act and federal law.
Do we give any weight to the fact that the railroad has offered to sell the entire 55 acres to a third party?
Well, that's certainly indicative of their plans for future use for the property. And as we outlined in our brief, that future use was something that was not transportation by rail carrier. That future use was something that was outside the sweep of ICTA entirely. So that's, in our view, strong evidence of what the railroad's future intentions were for the property, and it was not for rail transportation.
Counsel, could the railroad have removed this case to federal court?
No, Your Honor. ICTA is a defense. It's something that can be raised in state court proceedings, ICTA preemption, but it's something that the state courts decide. There are a number of instances in which railroads have attempted to remove ICTA preemption cases, defensive cases, to federal court. That is, their argument is a theory of complete preemption, that ICTA so displaces state law that there really isn't any more state law. It really is federal law. My understanding is those cases are routinely kicked back, and the railroads are actually required to pay the attorney's fees and costs for the improper removal, because the law is quite clear it cannot be used as a basis for removal.
So under the appellate court's decision, in which they say this is preempted by federal law, then what is there any remedy at all? If a federal court won't take it and the state says it's preempted, and so it's in sort of legal neverland, you can never get a decision on this?
I'm not sure I understand your question, Your Honor. Are you saying that if the state court says that the state law action is not preempted?
No, if the state court says it is preempted, as the appellate court has said, and the federal court won't take one, how do you ever get a decision on it?
If the state court says that the action is preempted, what would you, let's say we weren't here, the court didn't accept this case at all, so we're not here at all. I believe that the city of Girard would have the ability to file a petition or a request to institute a declaratory order proceeding with the Surface Transportation Board. The board would have the discretion to either allow that proceeding to be instituted or not. If it said no, then it's game over. If it said yes, then the matter could be presented to the Surface Transportation Board for their decision. Or in rare instances, actually, the board will sometimes see that the facts are so clearly presented that there is no preemption, so clearly on the facts that it just essentially grants judgment on the pleadings to the party that is seeking a declaratory order.
And if we say there is no preemption,
what we are asking
is there no remedy for the railroad in federal court?
The remedy would be a petition for cert to the U.S. Supreme Court, the same as any other case in which a federal statute allegedly has a preemptive effect and is decided in state court. So I guess obviously my time is about done here, but just to sum up, the facts in this case do not warrant preemption based on what's on the ground right now. The railroad's current use of the property, there was a small area that was used for storage and maintenance supplies.
So, wait a minute, Counselor, are you neutral or are you advocating for one side or the other?
No, we're neutral, but we're trying to get the law right, Your Honor. Okay.
I think I heard that from the appellant.
We think that the appeals court was right part of the way. The appeals court looked at, is this a per se preemption type case? No. The appeals court then said, all right, well, how's the railroad currently using the property? Is there going to be an unreasonable interference with currently existing railroad transportation? The appeals court looked at the facts
and
said no.
You have a difference with the appellate court's interpretation and importance they place upon the facts here as they relate to railroad usage of this property.
Particularly, Your Honor, how they addressed the future plans for use of the property in light of the presumption against preemption. What they need to be showing is that on these facts, it is the clear and manifest purpose of Congress that federal law should preempt state law. And these facts are just too weak to overcome that presumption. They don't show a clear and manifest purpose.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Lipka?
Madam Chief Justice, and if it pleases the court, I'm Tom Lipka here representing the appellee, Youngstown Belt Railroad Company.
Counsel, before you begin with your argument, could you tell us what the status of the contract with the landfill company is?
I could, Your Honor. Part of that, and I was chided in the brief for facts which are not in evidence in this case. A lot of things have happened since the trial court, but to respond to your question, the contract will not be consummated. Total Waste Logistics applied for a permit for the construction and demolition debris with the City of Girard's Board of Health. That was denied, and they then appealed that to the Environmental Review Appeals Commission. They have since withdrawn their appeal. It's my understanding they've withdrawn their permit application from Girard. We have received a letter from Total Waste Logistics basically stating that they're not going to pursue the construction and demolition debris anymore. So a lot of the discussion, at least in my opinion, in the briefs and today, is to some extent moot because the landfill, it's not going to happen.
Thank you.
Counsel, is transportation of waste actually railway transportation?
It depends on the factual situation, Your Honor. There was a case that was cited by the Court of Appeals which says it is. There were certainly cases cited today by the appellant in the amicus that says it's not. It just depends on how it's done. I think that is a fact-specific. At least from my review of it, I think the cases are a little bit all over the board on that.
So is it dependent on how much track is is present that the railroad travels over with relationship to the property it's delivering to? Or does it depend on the cargo it's bringing? Or what are the facts that shift it one way or the other?
Sure. I think this is a developing area as far as landfills, and I think this is probably the concern that the state of Ohio has, is that landfills are going to attempt to piggyback on preemption rights currently associated with the railroads. So a lot of these cases are relatively new, and the facts are, different in each case. I'm not really, in a position to tell you on a case-by-case basis what's different. There's cases in which, in fact, it was cited by the amicus, in which it was the sender of construction and demolition debris, in which they ruled that that was not covered by certain preemption rights. Again, there was the case cited by the Court of Appeals in which they said it was. We don't know. Assuming that the Total Waste Logistics did consummate the contract, which is not going to happen, it's not clear what type of arrangement they would have. As was cited in the briefs, there seem to have been several side arrangements between the railroad and Total Waste Logistics as far as what track would be where, what easements would be returned, what side tracks would be allowed. And although the contract says 55 acres, the testimony of both sides was that that's not quite the situation. It may be as little as 30. It might be more. It just depends on the business needs of the parties. Sorry. And as far as my argument here today, the court, at least several of the justices, have already picked up on what I believe is the most important part, which is that the appellant here today is trying to get a third bite at the factual apple. The as-applied preemption analysis requires a factual determination of whether the particular state regulation here in appropriation proceeding has an unreasonable burden or, unreasonably interferes with railroad operations, with transportation. That's a factual question. That question was decided by the trial court in favor of the railroad. That question was then decided by the Court of Appeals in favor of the railroad. And what the appellant, and I think was candid enough to admit to you today, is they want a third bite at the factual apple. They want this court to review the evidence and make a factual determination that's different than the two lower courts. And as I cited in my brief, that's not what the role of this court. And in fact, this court has made it clear for many years that that's not what you see your role as.
Well, now based on what you've told us, the fact that you don't have a purchaser for the property, it's a completely different case because there is no analysis of the analysis that was employed by the Court of Appeals talking about the delivery of this debris by the railroad to this site and the effect that will have on this site as making it either regulated or unregulated by the state because of its nexus to the activity of the railroad is really kind of it's a fact that's not in play any longer.
I think what the Court of Appeals did, Your Honor, was they took a look at the railroad's current use of the property. They then took a look at the railroad's stated future purpose, assuming the landfill didn't come in. Then they took a look at the railroad's stated purpose, assuming the landfill did come in. It was one of the logic trees where things start to branch out all over the place. And the Court of Appeals ruled that under any of those scenarios, this would be preempted because it was going to be used for railroad purposes. The appellant, and certainly the state of Ohio's particular beef or quibble, is the one particular branch of the logic tree where the landfill came in and whether that would be used for railroad purposes or not. Here we have a situation where, assuming, I think it's a fair assumption, that it will not be consummated, we've now got the other stated railroad purposes for what they're going to use it for. And although I don't think the facts are relevant here, as I said, because this court should not be reviewing the facts, there was significant testimony in the record that the railroad has future expansion plans for this area for a variety of reasons, which I won't go into today. And those are facts that both the trial court and the Court of Appeals agreed with, as well as the present and current use of the property.
Counsel, doesn't that still raise a legal question? Assuming all of these facts are as the trial court and the appellate court found them, the implications as to whether or not it's an unreasonable interference is still a legal question, is it not?
Not in my opinion, Your Honor. I believe that the decision of does the attempted state action unreasonably interfere with transportation, that's a factual question. It depends on what the transportation is, what actions they're attempting to take. I believe that falls under an issue of fact as opposed to an issue of law.
Well, how about the question of whether it's transportation or not? That seems to be an issue in some of the cases, whether it's transportation or not.
I would submit that that's also a factual question. I mean, you need to, or you being the trial court or the trier of fact, needs to decide whether this is transportation. And then if it is transportation, is that unreasonably interfered with by the state action? Those are some factual questions.
But counsel, if you look at paragraph 56 of the Court of Appeals opinion, that is the holding here. In other words, to the extent that there is the transportation, Court of Appeals is saying it falls within the definition of rail transportation, and then there is that would automatically come within the STB's jurisdiction, cites the 11th Circuit here. So it appears that this Court of Appeals is making the statement that transport of waste is automatically, rail transportation is automatically interference that calls into play preemption.
I think you agree with you, and maybe I'm not fully understanding the question. I agree with you that the Court of Appeals found in the scenario where a landfill would come in that the described scenario would be transportation. And certainly if it's rail transportation, it falls under ICTA. And then I believe the Court of Appeals felt it would be preempted in that scenario.
And you don't see that as a legal ruling?
No, I believe the Court of Appeals took a look at the facts as how it was described with the landfill coming in and the sidetracks and the situation where easements would be granted back to the railroad. And taking a look at that factual scenario, I believe the Court of Appeals ruled that it would be transportation.
So under your analysis, because I'm troubled by the Court of Appeals had also talked about these unspecified plans for development in the future, not even involving the waste issue. Under what theory do you believe the state would have the ability to come in and acquire the land through eminent domain? Is it any plans for development in the future? Because if there's a strong presumption in favor or a strong presumption against preemption, under what fact scenario? Because if you can just say at some point in the future we're going to develop, I don't understand when the state would ever have the ability to come in.
I think a lot of the courts have struggled with that issue, and there have been, you know, anytime someone wants to come in and there's requirement for future plans or at least a representation of future plans, you get the same argument, which I believe is the one you made, that those are speculative. You know, how do we believe that? And I think each court then makes a factual determination as to how realistic those plans are.
But don't we start with the presumption against preemption?
Well, that's an interesting point. I hadn't addressed that yet. I believe there's one case out there which was cited in the briefs, which says there's a strong presumption against preemption. There's case after case after case in describing ICTA, and those are just listed in my brief, which describes how broad-reaching the ICTA preemption is and how the congressional intent encompasses it. And I would submit maybe there's a strong presumption in favor of preemption, at least as far as ICTA goes. I'm not willing to concede that point.
Counsel, the part that kind of troubles me about paragraph 56
sure.
is to the extent YBR's and TWL's plans come to fruition, and then it goes on to say the participation in transporting the debris to the landfill would fall within the definition of rail transportation. I don't think at that point anybody knew what their plans were going to be to come to fruition. There was testimony that we may sell all 55 acres, we may sell 30 acres. There was no definitive statements about the reservation for easements to construct additional track, whether the railroad was going to continue, in an expanded role there or just to carry the trash to the dump site. So if that plan is not going to come to fruition, then the speculative nature of this Court of Appeals opinion could be viewed as just that, speculative, and to be out there as authority without the attendant facts being written in stone is kind of a problem, isn't it?
Well, there's case law out there, Your Honor, which I cite in my brief, and it escapes me right now, but there are numerous cases which say that you are, in fact, allowed to consider future plans for the property. certainly the railroad has to come forth with whatever evidence they have to show what those future plans might be.
Well, yes, but the question is, how definitive do those plans have to be? The role of the railroad in the future plans is crucial to the decision.
Well, as far as how definitive they have to be, I would submit that that's up to the trier of fact in their determination as to how solid they believe those future plans would be. I'd also submit in this case, just based on the present use of the property, Girard's taking of the amount, 80% basically of the railroad property, should be preempted on an as-applied basis. Certainly the Court of Appeals...
Doesn't this all have to go back now because of the change in the facts?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I mean, the Court of
Appeals... I didn't hear you.
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
You don't believe so?
No. The Court of Appeals ruled that based on the present use and based on the suggested possible future uses, all of that together, this case is preempted. The trial court didn't even worry about some of the future uses. It was based more so on the current use. They found that this case was preempted.
I thought the finding was that they really only needed about 4 or 5 acres for their staging area out of the 55 that they own.
Well, the testimony from the railroad was that they currently used about 3 or 4 acres of property to stage and for a variety of other issues. But they certainly have future plans, albeit with the Total Waste Logistics or not, to expand and add additional rail lines. And, you know, this property is actually located what's currently becoming a very industrialized area, and the railroad has a lot of big plans for this yard. I would also submit, although the question hasn't been posed to me, it was posed to the appellant, this case should be in front of the Surface Transportation Board. Certainly railroads will often remove these to federal court. There's issues as described by the amicus counsel as to whether there's complete preemption. It's a little bit of a different standard as far as removal versus the preemption that we're talking about. But all of this needs to end up in front of the Surface Transportation Board.
Can the railroad take it there?
Well, the railroad, the procedure would be that you ask the court to refer it. What you do is you explain to the state court about these preemption issues, which we're doing here, and you can ask the state court to then refer the case to the Surface Transportation Board. Or in the alternative, it can simply be dismissed as based on the preemption grounds, and then the City of Girard has the option to file, as was described, a declaratory action in front of the Surface Transportation
Didn't
Board.
Didn't the trial court try that here? Wasn't the initial order from the trial court to go to the Surface Transportation Board?
Correct. Early in this case, there was discussion of referring this to the Surface Transportation Board in front of the trial court.
Yes.
The trial court used some interesting language when it initially tried to do that, and that sort of raised the eyebrows of the Court of Appeals, so they remanded it back to the trial court. Mm-hmm. And when they remanded it back to the trial court then issued a different decision which didn't refer it to the STB. So that's a very sort of simplified version. But yes, this should be in front of the STB, and what I believe should happen here is that this court should affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals, which would have the effect of dismissing the City of Girard's case. Once that happens, the City of Girard can turn around the following day and file a petition with the STB, which is where this should all be to start with, because the STB is the one unique body that should be governing railroads and should be deciding these issues, should be deciding what's rail transportation and what's not. It has the expertise. That's why it's there. That's why Congress set
and
up
if
it
we,
there.
If
you
we
want
reverse...
it there, why did the railroad object to the trial court sending it there?
Well, we did not object. In fact, the trial court's potential referral to the STB was at our request at the railroad. Okay. We want to be in front of the
it
STB.
It was the city that objected to it.
Correct. Right.
And if we reverse the holding of the Court of Appeals?
Well, if you reverse the holding of the Court of Appeals, it depends on what grounds you reverse the ruling on. But in theory, we would then end up back in front of the trial court, because we have other defenses based on necessity of the city's appropriation action. And my time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Counsel, you've used all of your time. You may have 30 seconds.
May I point out to the court on page 2 of my brief that it's a well-settled matter of law that an appellate court may not consider materials, evidence, or matters outside the record. And it's actually, this court has indicated it's improper for the appellee to suggest or submit such material for consideration.
It was a direct question. I don't think he tried to submit anything. You had a direct question asked him. by the court.
I understand that, but it's still improper to use evidence that is outside the record.
Doesn't the fact that the buyer went away help your cause?
The fact is that we have not seen any indication that the contract has been canceled. We've heard indications that the application was denied, but the contract itself, the property could be used for any other purpose other than landfill. There was no condition in the contract that it had to be exclusively used for a landfill. It could be purchased by that landfill company and sold to Montgomery Ward or sold to another company. That contract, if you would look at the
contract... refile your eminent domain action.
Well, the problem is that we're hoping to get a closure to this case, and I agree with the Chief Justice with regards to the questions here regarding, oh, we might use it in the future. Every railroad is going to say that. Every case that comes up here says, oh, we may have a need in the future. Like Mr. Strawn took a circle on a map and he said, oh, we need 3-4 acres. It wasn't on a particular plan. Oh, we need these 3-4 acres. And it just so happened it was right in the middle of the landfill area that they were going to use. I mean, that shows you that obviously they don't really mean what they say. And it's speculative as to how they would use it in the future.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.